Welcome to On Mindfulness. On Mindfulness is an offering by the Shasta Resilience Project, and it's our opportunity to engage in deeper discussions with wellness practitioners within the mind-body medicine community. And it's an offering by KKRN Radio, community-supported radio, and we'll have links in the show notes to support the Shasta Resilience Project, KKRN, and the work of our interviewee today. I'm in conversation with Marcia McGetrick-West. And as always, I'm going to let her introduce herself in whatever way you choose, Marcia.
Hello, and thanks for having me. This is really fun. Well, my name's Marcia McGetrick-West, and I have been a massage therapist, health educator, and body worker, yoga teacher, dancer, lots of things. But I've been in the massage therapy and body work world for 34 years. And I have a practice here in Reading. I've been here for 27 years doing that. So, but I did have a few things I thought I might just tell you about.
Sure,
okay,
sure.
So I was reflecting on mindfulness in regard to my practice. And I remembered that throughout my childhood, I was really familiar with this sense of mindfulness. And I think this is part of what brought me to what I do, you know,
yeah,
from a very young age.
We love those stories.
Yes.
And that's usually how I open. So please,
okay.
Please.
So I grew up in Eastern Oregon, in the mountains, in the valley, and the high desert up there. And I had a lot of opportunities to be in nature and loved it. And having an inner knowing of something that unites us with nature and our true natures, that, you know, from a really young sense, I couldn't define it. So it took me, you know, 40 years to figure out something.
Right. Like most good things,
yeah.
Right?
Exactly. So I do feel like this has been a driving force to my endeavors to find my niche in the healing arts, meditation, yoga, the healing arts especially, and in different parts of my life, the arts of dance, graphic design, and now it's morphing into another kind of art that all of this is a culmination of in developing my painting. So it's all an alchemy.
Yeah.
That's what I feel like. It's just an amalgam of all these things that mush together.
Yeah.
And but that it's truly at the base of my practice as a healing practitioner and body worker.
Mm-hmm. I want to ask you about those early days of how you got introduced to massage and body work. But first, I'm wondering if you can put some context on what you mean by healing arts. You know, I have such a range of people in my life, and I certainly have some in my life that are much more linear, scientific thinking, mm-hmm. and so they might group a whole bunch of things in the woo-woo category.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
But I've found in the people that I've spoken to for these podcasts, there are some very grounded and rich descriptions of what they mean by terms that in the regular world people brush off.
Well, I'm very familiar with the whole idea of how people take things in the woo-woo area, and it's kind of out of context.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I guess I can explain it this way. When I first began my practices, I was moving toward the Eastern practices, shiatsu, jinshin do, acupressure, and that sort of thing. And I was also an active Zen meditation student at the time, back in the mid-80s. So it really resonated with what I did, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then I left the Bay Area and came back up to Northern California. Excuse me. And what I found was at that time, and that was like 1995, it was harder to sell shiatsu in a way to the people that I was coming in contact with. And it was, so I started blending my practice, and I had a very wonderful friend here who had been in practice for a long time. She did a lot of sports massage, so that wasn't really my bent, but I decided to incorporate a more scientific approach of St. John's neuromuscular pain therapies, which incorporated deep tissue, trigger point work, and all of these things were based on more science.
Yeah.
And people related to them more. And in my mind, all body work is energy work, because we are an energy field, period. Mm-hmm. Inside and outside, and you know, everything around us is, I mean, that's physics, right?
Mm-hmm. Movement. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're constantly in motion.
So when I explain what I do to people, I tell them that I'm a therapeutic massage therapist. I've studied at the National Holistic Institute when it first began in Emeryville. And I got a really rounded kind of education. Took me a year, which was a very good program. And then I taught after that. So I have some things that gave me some integrity in how I presented.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just started experimenting with my own, what I really loved in what I did. And when I did become more interested in doing energy techniques, acupressure is one. I had some basis to educate them on its benefits and its 5,000-year-old history and how it began in China with the peasants giving each other finger pressure, you know, and relating that to the animal kingdom, how they heal themselves by touch and, you know, licking and resting and, you know, all these things that we all do.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, I hope that's what you're looking for.
Yeah, there. Yeah. Well, it's interesting to me because, you know, mindfulness itself or meditation can be passed off as new agey or woo-woo, which is so interesting to me that some of the things that people call new age, like you say, have thousands of years behind them.
Yes.
Well, and I remember when I first became acquainted with your work, you had such a following among the people that I was working with at a therapeutic boarding school. And it was of a level of, what do you mean you don't know Marcia?
Oh my goodness.
Have got to know her.
That was some good work we all did together.
Yeah.
That was wonderful. Yeah. I think that for me, I began to incorporate things into my work that wasn't just what I call foo-foo.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, and those are wonderful, you know, a straight ahead traditional Swedish massage and lots of oil and, you know, all that kind of stuff and scents. And I use all that, but I've always looked at the whole person. That's what I've tried to do. And that was my education introduction when I went to NHI too, was that, you know, it's look at the whole person, you know, with how we do the intake. We learn something about you, you know, we look at what the history of your physical life has been, maybe, you know, since we're not, it's out of our scope of practice to do any kind of mental or emotional work, but there is a component of that too. And there's a way in which you can just ask people their stories, and then you get a lot of information. And that way I can reach in my tool basket and pull out, well, I think maybe what would work for you is some nice neuromuscular trigger point work to release the pain. You know, I mean, this is just random, but, and then maybe some calming work with some Jinshin Do acupressure, or maybe some healing touch energy therapy, where you can just kind of float away and relax and allow yourself to go into that very mindful, peaceful, inner and deep place of healing. Because what I've learned over the years through meditation, through teaching yoga, and one of my loves is restorative yoga, is rest is where the healing happens. And so on so many levels. So if people fall asleep in my sessions, that's a good thing. Because I know that they're receiving what they need to be receiving.
Right.
You know, they're doing the work. I'm just assisting.
That's such a beautiful way to put it. I know in some of the social justice work I'm involved with, the critical role of resting and connecting and self-awareness and self-compassion is so foundational to that. And when you think of the importance of sleep and rest and integrating what's happening in your mind as well as that your body's involved in, really undervalued in our society.
Yes, definitely. Taking time for just resting. One of my mantras when I was teaching yoga was, the doing is in the not doing. You know, that's an old adage in that in that history. And that's a really hard concept for us in this culture.
For sure.
If we're not doing something all the time, even when we're having a cup of tea or a cup of coffee, or, you know, we're writing or we're watching or we're, you know, we're multitasking, or and we feel like we're not doing anything because we're sitting down or something, you know?
Right.
But I mean, not doing anything. Like going out and sitting on a bench and watching the trees. You know, that's not doing for me.
Right, which
it's nourishing.
Can also be described as being fully present to the moment.
Yes, yes. Those kind of moments can help heal us on different levels. You know, even if a disease is not being cooperative, we can still heal, excuse me, ourselves on an emotional level of some sort of acceptance of a more whole part of who we are. And in Buddhism, they call that true nature. You know, that stillness part of us that just knows. I mean, you just know when you are taking your walk or you're holding your baby or, you know, these wonderful moments of feeling love, or, you know, that there's something deeper than this doing society tells us.
And that seems so connected with where we find meaning and purpose.
Yes.
Yeah, our why for being here.
Yes. Well put.
You mentioned restorative yoga, and the previous episode was with Sharon Howland, and she talked about different kinds of yoga. We did not touch on restorative yoga, I believe. And so I'm wondering how you came to that and how you would describe it to people who are not familiar with restorative yoga.
Okay, good question. when I was teaching yoga, I began teaching just a basic kind of yoga, hatha yoga. And I was introduced to restorative yoga. And what it is it's more of a, it feels like you're just going to lay down and do nothing. But it is pose work with lots of props and bolsters and ways to put yourself into these passive positions, mostly lying down or sitting. And it's really focused on breath work, of being very present in your body and being comfortable, finding a way to breathe and maybe help pain levels decrease, to quiet your mind. And it's also very regenerative in that sometimes you're upside down, you know, maybe laying against the wall with your legs up, which is a beautiful pose for people who've been on their feet all day, for restoring the lymphatic system, because the lymph flows in a different direction than the blood flows. The blood flows down and comes up, and the lymph flows from down to up. So it's very cleansing, detoxifying, and that sort of thing. And afterward, you can feel like you had a full workout.
Mm-hmm.
But it's lovely to do in the evening so that you can go home and you can get perhaps a better night's sleep, because you've restored your central nervous system and relaxed your parasympathetic nervous system, and you just have a deeper sense of peace and calm physiologically, emotionally, mentally, and perhaps even spiritually.
And even right before bed, because I know sometimes some practices are more activating than, but it's relaxing as well as restorative.
Exactly. And, you know, oftentimes in my busy life in the past 20 or 30 years, I relied on restorative yoga far more than I did a really heavy duty practice. But I was teaching, more active classes as well, more invigorating. And so what I would do for myself, I would come home and do my own restorative practice and my meditation practice, which reinvigorated me at a different level. So it's kind of like that whole thing of yin-yang. And when we're really yang, we're out, we're doing, we're, you know, everything is doing. And yin is within, bringing you back to your center, grounding, revitalizing your systems, deactivating your brain, all of those things. And then giving you a more balanced sense of self.
Mm-hmm.
So I've found that it was a confidence builder too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you would really afterward feel like, I was so good to myself. You know, I can go out there and do this task. You know, it's a balance. And one other thing I would say about yoga practices in my experience is, as we age, they change. You know, I mean, you almost have to change your practice. Like if you were a 26K runner once a month, maybe now you're a walker, because your joints aren't handling that too well, or you don't have the lung capacity, or, well, you know, I mean, just aging is aging. Mm-hmm. And this is also an ageist society too.
I have noticed.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so I think it's really important for us to understand that, you know, I learned this as I taught yoga and I was being taught yoga by some wonderful teachers, and that sometimes we injure ourselves, so the practice has to change.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but that we need to be open to what is presently happening for our own health and well-being, and to stay in balance in body, mind, and heart.
Mm-hmm.
I do have numbers of techniques that I use and modalities that I lean on. I am also, for the last 10 years, I trained and studied the healing touch work, which is a nurturing energy massage, a nurturing energy technique that I can incorporate with a kind of therapeutic session. I work on all kinds of work with, not on, but with many different people of different ages, with syndromes and cancer survivors, post-surgery, pre-surgery, post-surgery. I've worked with emotional trauma, without being, you know, involved particularly with what is going on, which is, that can be a challenge sometimes, but I love working with people with those kinds of things and integrating the energy techniques because they respond very well sometimes. So, I mean, it's just, it's kind of all over. I've one of my greatest hopes for myself when I first started this out back in the late 80s was that I wanted to have as diverse a practice as I possibly could and learn as much as I possibly could all the time. So I'm big on continuing education.
Mm-hmm.
So I studied a lot of different things. You know, and now sometimes when I'm working, I don't have a name for it.
Right. Right.
Because like you say, it has become integrated.
Mm-hmm.
And then someone might ask me, well, what are you doing now? And so I go, well, you know, it kind of takes me out of where I'm at,
right,
you know, to explain.
Oh, while you're serving
while
someone.
I'm serving, yes. But, that happens, and that's good for them so that they mm-hmm. can, so it's an educational process too,
right,
for them to learn and to understand. And the biggest underlying hope I have is to gain their trust,
mm-hmm.
you know, that it's a safe, trusted space that they can feel like they dropped into, you know, a mm-hmm. vortex or something, you know, where they mm-hmm. don't have to worry about anything, you know,
yep.
and that we're just there together, doing this together. Mm-hmm. And that helps the individual take their own responsibility for their healing mm-hmm. on whatever that is, if it's, you know, a sprained ankle or a shoulder surgery or a broken heart,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, but at the base is, you know, I try to provide compassion in a loving kind of, with loving kindness.
Yeah.
So that trust can be developed. And in that environment, people are, I find, more able to do their own healing work. So I guess that's kind of a long way to explain what I feel like the healing arts is about for me,
uh-huh.
and kind of my emerging journey from when I first began. But it has a lot of components of what I asked for a long time ago, you know, that seem to be popping up. And I've worked with I've worked with very ill people. I've worked with dying people. Great honor for all of those things. And I can use my tool bag again, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives me deep pleasure.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, I listen to you and what I hear is bringing diverse techniques and approaches to the table, as
yes.
it were, so that you can be responsive to the individual needs and context of that person, and that you're the main end sounds like it's really helping to facilitate a person's healing journey.
That's the goal. I definitely call it the art of the healing journey.
Mm. Mm.
That's kind of my motto these days in all respects. The healing arts, you know, mm-hmm. if it's massage or Feldenkrais work or Aston patterning or heavy duty sports massage, or, you know, whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
it is that person's healing journey.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think about times where I've gone probably too infrequently to massage therapists. This is why I'm on your waiting list now, where I have that desire and I've gone mm-hmm. into places where I don't really know and say, well, what, you know, tell me what you think I need, and I'm open to anything. And many people are just confused. I'm like, okay, my neck hurts. It does require a certain amount of groundedness and vulnerability and trust mm-hmm. in the person to be open to different ways. And mm-hmm. and I think about, I was listening this morning to a podcast on research that's being done on compassionate self-touch, mm-hmm. like a hand on the heart or mm-hmm. a hug, giving yourself a hug. I used to have a friend from Colombia who would like kiss their fingers and then put it on their cheeks. Like she's giving,
sweet.
It was so cute, giving yeah. herself little kisses.
Yes.
But that's ongoing research too. I mean, the healing power of touch,
it is,
has a lot of different research mm-hmm. behind it.
Mm-hmm. Well, babies don't survive without touch.
Oh, exactly.
Know, that sort of thing. That's what they found in the NICU, where, you know, they bring little teeny tiny premature babies to life over 2 or 3 months just by touching them and holding them. And, you know, if they don't have that, they just don't survive.
Well, and I, you know, I don't know if I've told this story before, but I was in the Peace Corps in Morocco for 3 years. And in the summer, 2 summers, I worked in an orphanage, and there was a volunteer who was there in the orphanage. And I think there were between 30 and 40 babies, up to a few 3-year-olds. And the women there were maybe 3 or 4 women who did everything. They cleaned, they cooked, they changed the babies, but they attended to whoever came in. But that meant that each child got only so much touch and attention. And it was very clear, the developmental effects.
Yeah.
Right? The emotional, yeah. the physical, the 3-year-olds were very behind in language learning.
Mm-hmm.
And so the volunteer was there essentially to help them with motor skills and a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
But the impact was really that connection and touch. And we know it with people who are older adults and isolated.
Yes. Holding an elder's hand, you know?
Absolutely.
Or sitting next to them. You know,
mm-hmm.
They're hungry, you know, they have a hunger. And sometimes I don't think they know that, you
mm-hmm.
know, because they might have lived by themselves for such a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But mm-hmm. yeah, I saw that a lot with my mom, too, when she was alone. And then she was alone in COVID. And, you know, and we were all so terrified that we couldn't be near each other. And that was a tough time.
It was very
yeah.
tough. I think we're still unpacking and healing from so much of that.
Yes. That isolation.
Yeah.
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 And the fallout, fallout from it.
Yeah.
You know, so we have had people talking about Tai Chi and yoga and some mm-hmm. other things. We haven't really had anyone speak about body work or breath work. But I think, you know, people think of Wim Hof when they think of breath work. Wim Hof, you know, mm-hmm. the kind of Wim Hof breathing. Mm-hmm. But body work is one of those things that it seems like can mean different things, or people understand it differently. What's important about it to you, and how has it contributed to your own well-being?
Oh, very good question. Mm-hmm. Well, sometimes when it slips out and people ask me what I do, I say, well, I do body work. And they go, well, where's your mechanic shop? Oh, no, no. I don't work on cars. I work on bodies.
People.
They go, well, what's that mean? Right? So
yeah,
I understand that. And so I explain it as body work is, like we were talking earlier, it's like an amalgamation of all of these techniques, you know. I do think that body work kind of came about in the, oh, I don't know, maybe 70s and 80s with Traeger and Bowen and, you know, all these different kinds of work with the body. And they started calling it body work instead of massage.
Mm.
And so it kind of had a development of, first it was, you were a masseuse. And that was from the French origin of massage. And then as it became more and more popular and people were getting educated more about it, and when I went to school in the late 80s, we were trying to change that image of being a masseuse to a massage therapist. And then there were different ways of the evolution of how body work came to being. Yeah. So it was, it became massage therapy, that you became a massage therapist. So there was a certain distinction about just doing massage. And then it became therapeutic massage. And then it became an amalgam mm-hmm. of people doing all kinds of different massage techniques and therapeutic massage techniques. And a lot of people now call themselves body workers.
Mm-hmm.
So I use that term sometimes when I want that distinction with people, when they don't want to just come and be rubbed, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one thing. Which mm-hmm. some people just enjoy that, and that's good for them, you know. And so if they say that's all they want, I'll say, you know, I can refer you to some people that you might prefer.
Mm-hmm.
But what I do is more specific.
Mm.
So my work is more integrated a lot of times, and it may not be a full body kind of situation, because someone might need some real specific trigger point work on a shoulder, or the areas that fall out around that, you know, that are affected. So it does become more like working on a car. You know, not really, but just to be a silly girl there. But so yeah, it becomes more about the work being done, I think.
Yeah, and when I hear you, it's the specificity, but in a context, like taking into consideration where you are, what you're telling me, what you're struggling with,
right.
How it's affecting you.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and, you know, say someone comes to see me and they've had a shoulder surgery, that, and then they've had physical therapy and And sometimes the physical therapy over several months makes them extremely sore and tired, and they don't feel like they're getting anywhere. And what they need is some soothing and some release from the other parts of their body that are sort of doing the work for the shoulder. And they just can't rest. So that becomes very specific. You know, that can easily take an hour and a half.
Yeah.
And you go slow too. I think the work we are doing as massage therapists, and I don't say this with any arrogance or anything like that, but I think that there's a lot of really good work being done more medically, you know, like medical massage and that sort of thing, that is actually helping to introduce into the physical therapy field more modalities. My niece is a physical therapist and recently called me about what I knew about cupping and needling, which is an acupuncture technique. Mm-hmm. I don't do either one of those. I do know massage therapists who do cupping, which is more of an ancient kind of suction stimulation, and effective in with certain people. But anyway, I thought she was going to be teaching some students about developing into different areas in their practice. So I thought that was fabulous, you know, that, and she was really excited about it and made sure that they knew she wasn't certified in these things, but these are things that she would suggest. So there's development happening, and I think the different modalities are crossing over and talking to each other. Not all, but they do seem to be integrating more, and I think that's valuable for people, especially people to get recovering from something and having lots of physical therapy. They will say, well, you know, maybe you need to go to so-and-so for a massage for specific something. I find that's been happening in the last number of years.
Yeah, I've been encouraged by movements in the medical field. Of course, it's not everywhere, but many here in California, anyway, health departments taking advantage of whole person care initiatives and people looking, you know, providers who are more interested in your entire life, what's going on, how that might affect your mind and your body and your emotions, because they're so intricately connected and enforcing each other, reinforcing or undermining each other, as it were. That's and even the one thing we've been talking about is the integration of creative expression, which you know, you mentioned earlier your painting recently, and I wanted to ask you about that, because this emerging field, and maybe it's much older than I'm aware of neuroaesthetics and the healing power of any kind of creative expression, which could be working on cars to
absolutely
take that metaphor, even, or garden, which you do a lot. Those are all forms of creativity that not only frees our voice and connects us with ourselves, but has such healing property. There's on the East Coast, there was an initiative where they funded doctors giving out prescriptions that included a coupon to take an art class or to, to join something. So, so I'd love to hear your thoughts on that and what led you to painting or painting again. I'm not sure.
Well, thank you for that. It's my latest passion, I guess. And it began I've always done some sort of art along the way. I mean, I mentioned I was a dancer for many years and was a performer, and that was my passion for a very long time when I couldn't really make a living at it, so I had to get a job. But I went. I'll give you a little brief history here.
Sure.
It kind of leads up. As I was dancing, I had to get a job. Mm-hmm. I was living in San Francisco, and several of our students in this little studio I worked in were graphic designers. And they asked one day if we knew anyone who needed some work, you know, just to be kind of a gopher in their studio. And it was at the time when they did book design, which was like really interesting to me.
Mm.
And of course, I raised my hand. I said, yeah, I need a job. You know, I can't live on you coming to class twice a week. You know? So anyway, they took me on and they apprenticed me for 2 years and paid me while they did that. And I just took to it like a fish in the water. And I learned the very basics of graphic design by drawing the boards, you know, for all of the layouts for the book pages, and then learned production, and worked with photography, and I worked inside the camera room, and you know, I just did all these really fun things. Plus, I was around all, it was a women's cooperative that I worked in, so they were all like my big sisters, and I still to this day am very close to all of them.
Mm.
And they were all just fantastic artists in different ways too. So I got some of that, and then I had my own little practice of graphic design and worked in another larger book design firm for a while and did production. And that's when I actually decided to try to find something else, because I'd been sitting over a desk for many years and I needed to get back to dance or something. I was just, and I, a little aside story here, I thought, oh, you know, somebody told me about this. They said, well, you know, just open the phone book and poke your finger into it. So I did it one day, you know, the big 3-inch San Francisco phone book.
Remember, yeah.
Opened it up, closed my eyes and went, okay, here it comes. Look down, and National Holistic Institute for Massage Therapy was under my finger. No kidding, that is not a lie. And I was by myself, and I just started laughing. I thought, oh my goodness, this is like a kismet, you know? So I called him up. I got an interview, and the next week I was enrolled. So that started that portion of that. Mm-hmm. And I was dancing some along the way. And then I taught a bit at the school there, and then I decided to move back to Northern California. And this is where it all began. So I then began, you know, a really long and very busy, and I have to say of this community, I've had a lot of wonderful clients and have had a very fine business here as a massage therapist and health educator. And through it all, I began making my own books, like handcrafted books that my sister-in-law, who was an artist, taught me how to do, a real basic thing. So for a number of years, I started making handmade books. And I still love to do that. And I kept saying, I want to get back to some kind of art. So when COVID came, I actually, before that, had reconnected with one of my friends from the design studio who does nature journaling out in the in the Sierras. Uh-huh. And she's a watercolorist journaling artist. And also, she does large abstract textiles, beautiful work. And So I started taking her classes and doing this like little miniatures of. So I learned how to watercolor before that. And I love to draw. I found I still love to draw. And so it's been a progression over the last, 6 years since the car fire and all of that. And I was recently, it's been since August 2022, I've kind of minimized the days I work as a massage therapist. I'm over 70 now.
Get out.
And I thought, you know, well, I still love my work and I'm going to keep doing that. Mm-hmm. But I also want to maybe learn how to paint. So I called a very well-known and lovely teacher here in Barbara Enochian.
Wonderful.
And asked her, because she was in the yoga community, and that's how I knew her, if she had any openings in her art group that she's done for like over 25 years. And she said, oh, yes, I'd love to have you come. And bless her heart, she let me come in August of 2022. And I just, like I said, took to it like water. Mm-hmm. And so that was my journey into art. And now the art again. And what I found was that doing this artistic process to me feels like meditation. And I can go into my little studio I've created at my home, and I can lose myself for hours and with, you know, all the things going on in the world and things happening in your family and, you know, illnesses and deaths and, you know, all of these things, births, mm-hmm. That it has really allowed me a way to, and it's a hard thing to talk about, just like meditation is a hard thing to talk about, but because there's sometimes no words for it, but it just kind of comes out. I get an idea, or my teacher gives us an idea, and then we put ourselves into it. Mm-hmm. And it's so interesting to see how it comes out at the end, and sometimes it's never done.
Mm-hmm.
But the process, I think the similarity that you were asking for, the similarity is that it's like life. And it's like a meditation in that things come up as you do it. So I'm working sometimes with my own self-loathing, you know, mm-hmm. like, I can't do this. This is too hard. That self-talk. And then I go, no, just like Barbara says, she says, just be fearless, you know, and just slap some paint on there. Or, you know, your best mistakes are your greatest paintings, mm-hmm. you know, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then it changes and it develops and you take a chance and you build confidence. And so it's so much what dance was for me in the beginning, which it felt like I was coming home.
Mm.
When I started doing meditation, that also felt like I was coming home. Mm. And doing this painting process to me is multi-leveled like that too.
Mm.
And so it has helped me in my health, my mental health. Sometimes it's a little physically challenging because you're bending over all the time. So sometimes I need to create more time for that. But I don't know. I hope that, does that answer your question?
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of a long-winded answer there.
Yeah.
But it is a process.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm reflecting on, earlier you talked about developing confidence through one of the practices, maybe in the restorative mm-hmm. yoga, and that concept as you describe the different things that felt like coming home, I just hear this combination of the things that we talk about so much of authenticity and mm-hmm. grounding and being present and just at home in the body,
yes.
in oneself. And also what you're saying about the attentiveness we need to recognize what does that for us now.
Yes.
Because it changes, oh, yes. not just because of aging, but circumstances mm-hmm. or things that might work when you're feeling one way don't necessarily work when you're feeling another way.
Exactly. And yes. Well put.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, we talk about that in mind, body, medicine. Like there are all yes. these tools, and some you may roll your eyes or I'm never going to do that. But it just expands your options. And often, like the greatest mistakes, the things that you thought that is totally ridiculous, there's
yes.
no way, wind up being favorites or very helpful in certain
yes.
circumstances.
And you know, that was so well put. And at the same time, there's becomes this willingness to go, well, you know, I really messed that up, and it's okay.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
like an living with acceptance.
Mm.
You know, okay, I can accept that now.
Right.
I'm going to put this aside, and then I'm just going to walk by it and go, what can I do? Sometimes I do drive-bys with my art piece. You know, I have it on my table or something, and I get to a place where I can't go any further. And it does reflect life. You know, and I look at it and I go, oh, that makes me tired, you know.
right.
Or, oh, that needs this color. Or I'll walk over and I'll just make a mark. You know, go, oh, I kinda like that. And then move on to go to work or whatever. Or do the dishes or make dinner
mm-hmm.
and come
mm-hmm.
back. And I've done a couple of pieces that way that were really fun when I was busy doing another thing that I do. And it was really helpful to get me through that process.
Yeah.
You know, just to have some kind of fun. Like my husband always says, well, go in there and have a little bit of fun.
You know? So true.
He's my biggest muse. You know? Yeah. And it makes him happy too. So, you know, it's exponential.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the poetry workshops we do through this Creative Core grant that I've been involved with, it's all about playing with words, because whether your acceptance leads to, well, let's see what I can do with this. And maybe that's a gift. Maybe that mistake is a gift.
Yeah.
To what we sometimes say in writing is being willing to kill your darlings. Like, okay, you sweated.
Yes.
You sweated over that, but
yes.
it's not working.
Right.
It's still not working. So maybe you can let go. And that's mm-hmm. okay. There's more. There's
yeah.
more where that came from.
Yes.
And those both can be true. And when you're mm-hmm. attentive, you can recognize which one is it.
Yes.
Right now.
I've been working on a piece, and it's, you know, it's just simple, you know, it's a vase with some flowers, but it's a collage, and I'm doing it for someone. And but the one I did before was more of my own self-expression, and I wasn't trying to incorporate some sort of perfection for someone else. You know, and so I found myself going through that process, and it was becoming too precious. How did you say it? It was, to kill my darlings, or
yeah, it's in writing we say that.
Yeah,
a lot. Yeah,
and so yeah, but I notice that more how I think I go to that place in other places in my life. I've been there in my therapeutic massage work, or, you know, any kind of the healing arts that I have done up until now too, of just feeling like I'm not quite enough at this moment in what I'm doing. I need to do more. And always when I find that place, I go, oh, well, you're not going to be able to do much of anything because you're stopping yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
And then once I let go of that, like you say, there's another word or there's another mark or there's another technique that pops up, or, you know, suddenly you sense something different that is puts you back in the flow.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is a beautiful place to end. Oh. But before we do, is there anything else that we that you were thinking about while we were talking that you want to be sure to say before we end?
I think it's just important to find maybe one or two things in whatever you do. I give this little advice to my massage clients, to my yoga students, to myself, is if you find you're doing too much at any given time, what is that about? I mean, and what is it that I need, and how can I give it to myself, you know, so that I can be more productive and be of service and be in my own gifts. It makes everybody happier.
It does. Those are great questions. Thank you so much. Oh,
thank you. Thank you. Sajona mai dunia na sajona mai dunia Sajona mai dunia na sajona mai dunia na Sajona mai dunia na sajona mai dunia na Let me say, say, my dunia na. Jigia, say, my dunia na. Wolofa, say, my dunia na. Sajona, my dunia na.